Explaining football to the friend who's just there for the nachos? Hard. Tailgating from home like a pro with snacks and drinks everyone will love? An easy win. And with Instacart helping deliver the snack time MVPs to your door, you're ready for the game in as fast as 30 minutes. So you never miss a play or lose your seat on the couch or have to go head-to-head for the last chicken wing. Shop game day faves on Instacart and enjoy $0 delivery fees on your first three grocery orders. Offer valid for a limited time. Other fees and terms apply.
When this happened, you talked about it on The Fan.
David Wells has pitched a perfect game. 27 up, 27 down. Baseball immortality for David Wells. And the Yankees win. The Yankees win.
When New York sports happens, talk about it here. The Fan, 101.9 FM, and always live on the free Odyssey app.
To save his life,
called his wife, and hey, 402, good morning. How are we doing on this Monday morning? Hope everybody had a great weekend. Happy Father's Day to all you fathers out there. And we wake up to a new world. Two teams going in opposite directions. And that has meant so much of a different story over the first 2 months, and now it's completely flipped. As the Yankees are the team fading. Oh, they got 9 stolen bases. That's the most ever from a Red Sox team, and they've been playing since 1900. Even before that, an embarrassing defeat. They've lost 2 out of 3 to Boston. They're the only team in Major League Baseball with 50 wins, but they can't beat the Red Sox. The season is falling apart. You know they're going to go get their ass kicked in Baltimore. What a disaster. What a disaster. And then the Mets can't be stopped. 9 of the last 11. Sweep the San Diego Padres. Jump out early on a very good starting pitcher in Dylan Cease. Alonso with a 3-run home run. Lindor with the home run to get him started. They almost blow it in the 8th and come right back in the 8th and add. And you could argue that was that, you know, that home run to start the 8th inning. From Torrens, you could argue the biggest hit of the game, because if they had to go back out in the 9th, only up a run, anything could happen. So they've had big hits. Obviously, J.D. Martinez waking up, this offense waking up. For me, that's the most important thing. If they would have won these games just with good starting pitching and figuring out a way to close the games at the bullpen, if they would have been winning these games 2-1, 3-1, 3-2, yes, victories are victories, and a sweep would have been very impressive. But the idea this offense is starting to wake up, J.D. Martinez with the enormous home run to beat Miami and to make sure you win that series against the lousy Miami team and then take it on in to this series against the Padres, where at one point he had 10 consecutive plate appearances where he reached, never mind the multiple home run games and the, you know, everything he's done for this team. Him as a stabilizing force in the middle of this lineup. You saw Nimmo get hot this weekend. Alonso with a big home run and then helped pad on in the bottom of the 8th. Like, this offense needs to awake. Awaken, I believe. Let me go with awaken. They need to be awake. They need to awaken. They need to do what they've been doing this past weekend. Because this was supposed to be the strength of the team, right? Not the starting rotation, even with Kodai Senga, who knows when we'll see. They've been excellent in the starting rotation, whether you finally got a good start out of Quintana, and you can argue he was the Mets' least consistent starting pitcher, and he gives you a good performance on Saturday. And, you know, Severino's been good, and Manaea's been pretty good, and obviously McGill and Peterson have come up and been good. You know, you got Scott in the minor leagues who's, you know, they're trying to limit his innings, but he's been good. There's depth in that starting rotation. That's all positive, and that's all great. The bullpen, who started out great this year, has faded a little bit. Hopefully Diaz comes back, got right back into the closer role, has been fairly good in a couple of appearances since he's been back. You're hoping the bullpen can turn it around, but this team was supposed to be carried by its offense, by its big-priced shortstop, by Pete Alonso on a walk year trying to prove he's a $200 million man, by Nimmo, who signed the contract and is one of the core members of this team, by a McNeil who's still terrible. He did make a great defensive play on Friday night, but terrible offensively. This offense, when they added J.D. Martinez, who was a 30-and-100 guy last year, this was supposed to be the force of the team. This is what was going to get them and to compete for a playoff spot, like the general manager told you at the beginning of the year. We're competing while we build, right? The typical, we can compete while we reshape the organization. And that sounds wonderful, but ultimately not an easy thing to do, and especially if your offense is going to struggle and J.D. Martinez is the only real addition you made to it. But when it starts to turn around and when these guys start to come through and they're scoring runs and where they are in the standings, a game and a half out of the wild card, and I told you this was going to be an important stretch, and to have a winning homestand, to go 5 of 6 in this homestand and to sweep the Padres, and now add the Padres to the list of teams that are in front of them, but a team that now the Mets have the tiebreaker over. I believe Stearns wants to trade. I believe Stearns wants to break it down. I believe if given the opportunity, he believes he can get a lot for some of these pieces, like Severino, like J.D. Martinez, add more to the depth of this organization, and go about rebuilding along with free agency next year and reshaping the Mets. I believe that's his plan. But I also believe you can't do that plan if you're going to have a team make the playoffs. You can't punt on a playoff season. You can't give up on a team that's primed to head into the wild card, no matter the record, no matter how they're playing. It's one thing to say, you know, I heard the owner when he did his stuff in London talking about, well, okay, you could be a wild card team, but if you're a couple games under 500 in the wild card, what does it mean? What does it mean? It means you're in the dance competing for a championship. And ask Met fans how many times that's happened over the course of their lifetime, because it's not as frequent as you'd like. And so this is an enormous stretch. It was a huge homestand, which they checked off. Now they're going on the road for Texas and the Cubs, another team in front of them that if they can figure out a way to win 2 out of 3 would take the tiebreaker over them. This is playoff time. These are playoff games for the Mets because they don't have all season. Sure, on some level, even if they trade away pieces, could they still compete? I suppose if they bring up kids and they play well and Beatty comes back and plays second base, whatever, as he's working on, and somehow he figures it out as a major league hitter, and you know they continue to win, sure. But ultimately, if they're going to trade away the best pieces they have, it's going to be very difficult to compete. So you have to do it now. You have to make sure this GM has no other recourse but to keep this team afloat, maybe even add to it in some small level. I don't think they would make major additions, but hey, you could add a bullpen arm. You could figure something out. You can get another bench piece on the team. You could do something to try and improve this team and give it a chance to compete, and this is all happening right now. So as they take 9 of 11, as they thrusted themselves back into the conversation, as they've pulled you back in as a Met fan, no matter how far out you are, no matter how disappointed you are in this team, no matter how ugly it's been, how many leads they've blown, how many times the offense has been shut down and not come through, no matter what you think of Alonso and what you think of Lindor, right now they are a game and a half out of playing playoff games. A game and a half. And while, yes, the entire field is in front of them, none of them scare me. And right now, this is the time for the push. Right now. Right now, push, honey, push. Because you don't have all the time in the world. You got to impart on this GM that it's now or never. And then we get to the Yankees, who did have a miserable 2 games in Boston. They take the first one, Verdugo, first game in Boston. I fully was ready to talk about Verdugo and the way he's played in that big moment. Maybe Verdugo's the type of player who rises his game because he hits that first pitch fastball to dead center field for a home run to get the Yankees started on Friday night. And I was looking forward to that conversation about, hey, Verdugo could be a playoff player. That adds in a, that's a different thing. You look at it in that moment to take that first pitch. But it got ruined by the next 2 games and how they played, and last night getting embarrassed. And they were. The Yankees were embarrassed. 9 stolen bases from a team is embarrassing. And right now they do have an issue with their catcher. They do have an issue with Trevino defensively, which, again, they have an issue at first base defensively, and they have an issue at catcher defensively with Trevino and Rizzo, which I never would have guessed. Could I have guessed they'd been terrible offensively? Yeah, that was an easy guess. But to think those could be the two biggest liabilities defensively, I did not see coming. But hey, they're going to have to adjust. And I think Stroman has a lot to do with it. I think if you have some of the lefties on the mound, clearly the run game isn't as persistent. I do not think because we saw 9 stolen bases from the Red Sox last night that the Yankees are destined or doomed to have 10, 8, 7, 6 stolen bases a night. I don't think this is some sort of blueprint on how to beat the Yankees. It's an issue. Trevino's slow. He's been slow all year. These teams have these numbers all year. You think no other team has tried to steal bases against the Yankees? You think suddenly the Red Sox tipped everybody off to the idea that they can run on the New York Yankees? Other teams have tried. Other teams have been successful, not to this degree. But it's a weakness inside this game, inside the team, no doubt. And now with Rizzo probably going to the IL, we don't know what it is. The initial images from whatever machine they used at Fenway were negative, but it doesn't sound like the Yankees are all that positive about it, considering how Rizzo feels. But ultimately, they played a lousy 2 games. The bullpen is starting to unravel, and that's kind of the, as great as this starting pitching has been and as deep as they've gone into these games, the fact of the matter is this bullpen, while doing a really good job for the most part this year, and Matt Blake's ability to transform these guys into something special, eventually they're going to have poor games. And right now, there's not a lot of guys in that bullpen you really thoroughly trust. It's Clay Holmes, maybe Weaver. We're seeing Tonkin kind of become that guy, amazingly enough, after being DFA'd 3 different times this year. But he's been someone who's been that good for them. But they need help at the bullpen. They need help with a corner infielder. And the catching is an issue. They have some issues. They're not perfect. But the fact of the matter is they're the only team in Major League Baseball with 50 wins. I'm personally able to put this Red Sox series behind me relatively quickly, especially because they have an off day later. They have an off day today, and then on Tuesday, the biggest series of the year, as they welcome in the Baltimore Orioles to Yankee Stadium. It's supposed to be 90 degrees a day. It's supposed to be crazy hot. Let's see if the Yankees can get hot. And that pitching staff, who I think they miss. I think they miss Bradish, and I think they miss Burns, who pitched yesterday. So this is a matchup. The Yankees have to win the series of Baltimore at home. But as ugly as last night was, it's one game, it's one series. They're like 17-3-2 in series played this year. I'm not going to get too hung up on it. There are issues, but they need to figure it out. And the biggest issue of last night's game, as much as I'll talk about the 9 stolen bases, and as much as I'll talk about the bullpen giving back up runs late in the game, the biggest problem with this game is another area of issue this New York Yankees team has, and that's Gleyber Torres. As the Yankees loaded the bases in the 7th inning, had an opportunity to blow the game open, Gleyber Torres has a 3-0 count and takes 2 fastballs right down the middle and then swings at a slider in the dirt for the worst at-bat this entire year. Bar none, the most unacceptable, disgusting at-bat this entire season by any Yankee player was that at-bat by Gleyber Torres in a 1-run game down 4-3. In Fenway, with an opportunity to break the game open and get a victory and a series win heading into that Baltimore series. Instead of everybody talking about stolen bases, we could talk about how the Yankees rallied in the 7th inning, put up a crooked number, and figured out a way to win this series against Boston. And instead, he had the most hideous at-bat you could possibly have. And Gleyber Torres is under the microscope here by the fan base, no doubt. He makes boneheaded plays on the base path. He makes errors in inopportune times. And he gives you at-bats like that. And I understand 3-0, you want to take a fastball, fine. But his taking a 92-mile-an-hour cutter right down the middle on 3-1 is borderline disrespectful. Right? It's borderline obnoxious. It is non-competitive. You got the bases loaded in a 1-run game. All you have to do is make contact, and you put yourself in a position to swing at a slider in the dirt when you took 2 fastballs down the middle? I mean, that's just a horrendous at-bat. It leads to a Trevino strikeout as well, swinging at sliders away, and then LeMahieu hits a line drive. And they had the bases loaded, nobody out, couldn't bring home a run. That was the end of it. The bullpen gave up runs from there. And ultimately, the Yankees played their worst series of the year. It was about as sloppy as it could be. The Saturday game was terrible as well. And they just looked awful for 2 games. And you got to hope they can turn it around, because this is not the time to play awful as they welcome Baltimore in. 888-808-1019. 888-808-1019. And both games were in primetime. And I got to say, I normally don't care. I'm the last person to bring up broadcasts. I'm the last person to bring up national broadcasts. I'm constantly defending like Joe Buck to my friends. He doesn't hate the Yankees. He doesn't hate the Giants, you weirdos. Like, everybody thinks these national broadcasters hate their team. But I have to admit, that Fox Saturday broadcast with Smoltz is unlistenable. I mean, it's unlistenable. There is so much downtime. They don't talk, and when they do, they talk in such generalities and take on the issues that are addressing Major League Baseball and not the game. Smoltz could not sound less interested. I mean, there is no emotion, there is no excitement. It is a brutal broadcast. My God, that's Fox Saturday game. That is, oh, what a horrendous broadcast booth. And I hate saying it because normally I don't care. I had to mute the television. It was brutal. And then last night, we all know Sunday Night Baseball has been, you know, a barren wasteland where nobody seems to like anybody doing the game since Joe Morgan. Right? I mean, it has been just, it's constantly turned over, whatever the case may be. And we all love Cone. I love Cone. But what they did yesterday in that broadcast, I forgot to ask you, Fliegelman, did anyone put any sign of Cassis in the system? Is there any of that ridiculous interview in there? I thought if Marco were here, we would.
Yeah, Marco wasn't here last night. I'll look, but I would doubt it.
I mean, they do
the never-ending interview.
Oh, my God. They go and they do these things. I don't think you get much. Every once in a while, if you have the right guy, you could get something from the on the field in the middle of the game.
Soto was interesting.
He wasn't bad. He was okay. He said something that's going to, I think, get inside the Yankee fan head a little bit, or just like, why not Judge when asked? I forget exactly what the wording was of the question.
Was it who hits the the hardest contact, the sound?
Yeah, it was like, what is surprising?
Him, Harper.
Yeah, and he said Harper. He said Harper's the sound off the bat
of
Harper.
And there was a third player in there. I forget who it was.
Yeah,
it might have been Stan.
Yeah, yeah, but he said Harper. So that's gonna upset the Yankee fan. But he's going to obviously sign with Philadelphia. But they go to Cassis for this interview. And he tells a story about how his father dragged him onto the field in Little League for Father's Day. That his father dragged him, and he used the term kick, like cartoon kicked him out onto the field because as a six-year-old, he made an error or struck out and went back to the bench and cried and didn't want to play the game anymore. So his father dragged him out onto the field. And one of the mothers of the other kids called the cops on the guy, and the cops came and arrested him. This is the story he's telling on national TV for Father's Day. And it took forever. And then they have him doing interviews. But can you imagine on Father's Day? I have a great story about my father when he dragged me out onto the field while I was kicking, screaming, and crying. He threw me on the field, cartoon kicked me to such a level that another teammate's parents felt it necessary to call the police. He was dragged out, arrested, handcuffed, put in a police car, and I remember him driving away, and he taught me a valuable lesson that I had a responsibility to my team to get out there. Yeah, I'm sure that's the lesson he taught you.
Now let's go talk to Dom Smith, who clearly wants no part of this.
Let's go talk to Dom Smith. And then give like the cliche, hey, you know, you didn't get a good, you popped that one up there. What are you going to do the next at bat? Like, they had no interest in talking to him.
Right, you had a couple of good swings that didn't lead to anything. Ultimately, you made out.
I mean, it was just, why did they have that for, sometimes they go on with this for so long. It's just ridiculous. That was horrendous.
My thoughts were even beyond the interview. Like, of course, this mentality with the players, like, you know what? You made it out. You didn't really help the team, but you had some really good swings at foul balls.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I turned it off. I couldn't even. I focused on something else while I was watching the game. I turned the volume down. It was horrendous. These broadcasts, I don't know why they try to reinvent the wheel. You don't need to talk to a guy in the dugout and let him do man on the street like it's a bit on Jimmy Kimmel, like it's a Tonight Show bit. Like, it's just, it was atrocious. It was atrocious. I mean, and then, do you remember, I don't know, you were in London. I don't know if you saw the game. ESPN did it with Michael Kay, did a ridiculous, like, the Philly fanatic dressed as, what are those, the soldiers or whatever have the high hats dressed in red who don't move no matter what
you do. Oh, like the guards in front of Buckingham Palace?
Yeah, the guards in front, there's a name for them, I think, but it's the guards in front of Buckingham Palace, yeah. So, the Philly fanatic is dressed like one of those, bringing tea to the broadcast booth. It took 20 minutes. They kept making snide comments about how he was dressed. They missed an at-bat. Alonso flies out to left field, and the camera is still on the fanatic handing out tea to Michael Kay. Like, why do we need to do this all the time? I don't understand it. Right, we got everyone's complaining about the coverage on the NHL game, right? They're cutting away, they're doing things typically they don't do. They're showing the bench while the play is still going on the opposite side of the ice. Like, why do we need to reinvent everything? Like, I understand trying to do new and innovative things, but like, man, oh man, talking to him letting him not only tell that ridiculous story that took forever, and then to let him proceed to go up and down the dugout talking to people. Like,
Don't forget, for the NBA Finals, J.J. Redick is too focused thinking about the Lakers job that he's not speaking on the broadcast.
I know. Well, I mean, that John Smoltz. Was it Joe Davis? Him and Joe Davis. I mean, I got the sense they don't get along. Like, as I was listening to the game, I'm like, these guys don't want to talk to each other. There was so much dead air. It was just ridiculous. And then, you know, they're talking constantly, both broadcasts were talking about how much, whether or not Cora is going to stay with the Red Sox. All right, I get it. He won a World Series. He's also as big a part of the cheating scandal in Houston as anybody is. And, oh, by the way, how many times have they finished in last place? But I know he ran circles around Aaron Boone last night because he has speed and the Yankees don't have a catcher who can't throw. But yeah, he managed circles around Boone. Managed circles around him. Well, they're 13 games behind. And on their way to another miserable season and not making the playoffs. But okay, Alex Cora is just a brilliant manager. Boone's an idiot. I get it. And we're all very concerned about whether Alex Cora is going to stay with the Red Sox. Gives a damn. Honestly, let him hit free agency and go somewhere else. No one cares. It's like they're in the middle of a dynasty. He won one World Series in 2018. Then he got suspended for cheating. He got suspended for banging on trash cans. It was his idea, practically. He comes back without any repercussion except missing a year. What'd he do? Beat the Yankees in a wild card game? Great. How many times did he finish in last place? But let's spend the whole broad. Every time we bring in the sideline reporter, let's talk about the career of Alex Cora. All right, 424, McMonagle here with the 888-808-1019, 888-808-1019. But the Yankees play probably their worst series of the year, get beat by Boston in Fenway 2 out of 3, as they get ready to take on Baltimore for the biggest series of the year starting tomorrow night. And the Mets are back. How do you feel about them? You confident? Has this 9 of 11, not having lost the series since the team meeting, Lindor coming around, J.D. Martinez hardly gets out, the offense awakening, figuring out a way to win a series, sweep the San Diego Padres, and get ready as they are only a game and a half out of a playoff position. The Mets season is back on!
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing.
But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Alo, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Add WFAN to your contacts to talk New York sports with us at 888-808-1019. Powered by AT&T Business.
All right, 431. Nick Monagle here with you on The Fan. So I did mention the football thing I wanted to talk about because I'm just a little, I just, there's been something that's been said that I'm trying to wrap my mind around because I know black and white numbers, yes, it makes a little bit of sense. But for me, I have a tough time just accepting it the way it's been portrayed. And I've heard a lot of people say it. I actually give credit to Recco. I heard him say it driving home on Friday with the warm-up show. Then I saw Craig do it, and I saw a bunch of people put it out on Twitter. And that's trying to understand the contract that Jacksonville gave Trevor Lawrence. Now, look, it's a lot of money. There's no doubt about it, and he has not warranted that contract. And I don't know why they did it this year. I feel like it could have been kicked down the line another year before they gave him this kind of bag to make him tied for the highest paid annually quarterback in the NFL. It is a bit much considering what he's done in this league, which isn't all that much. I mean, let's be honest. I mean, for him to make this much money, It's clearly what they believe he will be and not for what he's done because the numbers aren't any good. But what I don't necessarily agree with, although the numbers might be the same, comparing him to Daniel Jones in this town, I have a tough time when you think about, like, Daniel Jones, yeah, okay, right? The completion percentage, the total yards over their first 48 career games, the touchdown passes are relatively close, the turnovers almost exactly, team's point per game is pretty much the same. We watch the games, though, right? We watch the games because Trevor Lawrence last year was playing excellent football, had his team 8-3 before he got injured, and it all went to hell. Because when Daniel Jones got injured last year, the Giants were pretty freaking awful with Daniel Jones. With him healthy and playing, they were pretty awful. And if you want to tell me the weapons, I mean, do you think he's got far superior weapons? As Daniel Jones has had little to no help wide receiver position, I won't argue it. I mean, do you really think the Jacksonville Jaguars had just, you know, Christian Kirk's a nice wide receiver? Yeah, probably better than a lot of the Giants. Calvin Ridley came over and was ultimately disappointing. He had 1,000 yards, but ultimately was disappointing. How about Evan Ingram? Because Evan Ingram is their best weapon, quite honestly. 114 receptions, 963 yards coming from the tight end position. Because I feel like Daniel Jones had someone just like that and was unable. Oh, no, him exactly. And was unable to get anything out of Evan Ingram to the point where he got jettisoned from the Giants. I know they have the same playoff record, but we watch the games. This guy is far superior to Daniel Jones. I'm sorry, maybe I'm crazy. If I had to choose between the two, I would take Trevor Lawrence any day of the week. And I'm not trying to be a Daniel Jones hater, but I've just heard the comparison a bunch of different places. Now, while I'm not trying to justify what he got paid, because it seems ridiculous. It seems like a lot of money for someone who hasn't been successful, but I mean, you want to talk about all the things that hurt Daniel Jones, right? We ruined Daniel Jones. Well, he's got terrible coaching. Well, they gave him Urban Meyer to start his career. I mean, arguably the worst 1 year of head coaching in NFL history. Yes, he's got a Super Bowl caliber coach, the last couple years, but he got hurt again last year, and again, they were 8-3. You want to talk about offensive line play? He's got no offensive line. The Jaguars' offensive line, well, I just did a quick look on Pro Football Focus. They had them ranked at 26th in the league. Like, he has not played behind a good offensive line. He is not, his first year was a complete wash considering the coaching. Was an absolute disaster. Running back not nearly as good as Saquon Barkley, although Etienne is pretty good. He's not Saquon Barkley. Like, I understand the comparison because we, New York is New York. Daniel Jones got paid and is considered on every ranking list the worst quarterback in the NFL, which I don't agree with either. I think both of these quarterbacks are hard to figure out, and that's why maybe they do work as a comparison. Because I don't think Daniel Jones is the worst quarterback in the league over quarterbacks who haven't even suited up yet, which on some lists you see, which is ridiculous because he does have talent. He has led a team to a playoffs and has won a playoff game. But, I mean, Trevor Lawrence, in my mind, is much better than Daniel Jones. I don't care what the numbers say. I don't think he's been in a far better situation than Daniel Jones. I understand he shouldn't be paid like this, but we don't have to try and compare him. So, I mean, I get it. The numbers are the same, and that's fair. They are what they are. The numbers are what you are what your record says you are, to quote the great Bill Parcells. So I get it. But I'm just saying, for me, looking at these two players, I would, if I had Trevor Lawrence on the New York Giants and he was the quarterback of the New York Giants, I would feel much more comfortable giving him a contract, albeit, yes, $51 million a year is absurd for someone who's only had his track record. But somehow, when I've seen him play and healthy, I think I've seen a better overall quarterback than I have from Daniel Jones. And again, they both had Evan Engram. And Evan Engram has become a superstar with Trevor Lawrence. And he was terrible with Daniel Jones. And Daniel Jones, when healthy, still was miserable last year. They were 8-3, the one seed in the AFC before it all fell apart after he got hurt. Now, the contract, I agree, doesn't make much sense to me. I'm surprised they paid him, considering the numbers are even comparable to Daniel Jones, which they are. But for me, the player, I would trust the next handful of years that Trevor Lawrence is going to be the better quarterback than Daniel Jones. 888-808-1019, 888-808-1019. But the numbers are eerily similar, and I'm surprised he got the bag like that. I'm surprised he's that highly paid quarterback where it's tied for him and Joe Burrow as the number, highest paid annual quarterback. Sure, it's hard to justify. It's hard to understand other than they believe he's the future, and this is what quarterbacks get paid. And that's pretty much why Daniel Jones got his $40 million. Now, he didn't get nearly that much guaranteed. And if you want to call it a bargain by comparing the two, I think that's a valid point, I suppose. Because the production you're getting, if you're going just strictly on numbers, is no doubt for the production for production to pay $40 million for Daniel Jones as opposed to $51 million for Trevor Lawrence kind of makes sense. That it's a bargain. But if I'm projecting the next 5 years, I don't think it's close. Considering the major injuries Daniel Jones has gone through. 888-808-1019, 888-808-1019. Brett in Long Island, what's up, Brett?
Good morning, Chris. How are you?
Good morning, sir. What's going on?
I hope you had a good Father's Day. I wasn't calling, but you wrote me in. I feel like you're speaking directly to me when you're talking about Daniel Jones.
That's exactly what I did.
So two points. One, the fact that you're comparing Daniel Jones to Trevor Lawrence right there, that helps out the cause for Daniel Jones. Trevor Lawrence came out of college in 2019.
Yes.
Being the next Joe Burrow. He won the national championship game. You remember when he came out. I think we all thought he was going to be that next guy.
No doubt. Daniel Jones, he's been disappointing.
No one thought a Duke quarterback was going to live up to, you know, being a top quarterback. So right off the bat, we're comparing, you know,
the Giants,
types of drafted players.
The Giants clearly did. But you make it sound like he's a third-round pick. He's a sixth overall pick.
Well, that's a different discussion, right?
No, it's not. But
they picked Saquon Barkley first overall pick. I mean, we're going to talk about Edelman. We're going to talk about where they picked second overall pick.
I think what the Giants thought is more prevalent than, or and more to the point of the conversation than what me or you think. You're trying to make an argument for what
we think. We're talking about where we're drafting. I'm saying that those
And I'm
two
saying
players,
1-6 isn't that far off.
Okay. My point is, and you brought up Evan Ingram.
Yes.
Did you watch Evan Ingram on the Giants? I mean, come on, are you reaching now, Chris?
I'm just
saying. When you watch those games
Ingram,
with your friend,
what did he
was dropping balls. You wanted him out of here, yes or no? Did you?
Yeah.
Are you going to blame Daniel Jones for that? Please,
I'm not entirely blaming him, but Trevor Lawrence got 114 receptions out of him and 963 yards. You think Evan Ingram just suddenly knew how to catch the ball better? That the quarterback play has nothing to do with it?
Again, when he had opportunities to catch the ball, every single person I know did not want him here.
He did not play well.
I
understand
on the Giants.
But my point is, when we talk about weapons, you say how little weapons he had. You know, Daniel Jones, no weapons. Well, I'm just saying, at tight end, this is literally they had the same weapon, and one guy. You're right. When he was with Daniel Jones, I wanted him off the Giants, and now he's a perennial Pro Bowler with 114 receptions. I mean, I'm just pointing out the actual facts of what happened. He was a waste of space.
Is that even a discussion anymore, though, Chris? Chris, is that a discussion? But do you really feel in your heart of hearts that Daniel Jones, right, had the right people around him to be successful? That would be the question. Or do you feel right now, hey, I'd like to see what he could do? Like, listen, here's your thing against me. Oh, if you put him on the 49, all right, forget that argument. All right, forget it. But how about put him in a position? This is me, my take on Daniel Jones, right? Right. Remember this. I don't think he's had enough around him where I'm convinced that it's him and not the Giants at all. Like, in other words, this year, they redid the line. You know, they put the pieces around him. When I watch, if I say, yeah, come on, he's got everything around him, he's still not doing well, I'm with you. Right. I feel like they haven't put the completion of offense around him. Maybe you do.
No, I don't, but I think you could say that for a lot of quarterbacks in this league who still do better than Daniel Jones. That's what I'm
but
saying.
But they're ranked last. They were ranked like last in everything.
And he has something to do with it.
They were ranked last.
I understand that, but he has a little bit to do with it. The wide receivers were better when Tyrod Taylor came into the game.
Who was the first receiver on the Giants, the number one receiver? Slayton? Throughout the years he was here, Slayton? What would Slayton be? I used to do this with my friends. Yeah. What would he be on every team in the NFL? A three or four? Honestly,
yeah, I mean, I guess what would Nico Collins? What would Nico Collins be anywhere else? What would any, like, a lot of wide receivers need the quarterback to be good. Like, I'm just saying, like, yeah, Slayton, I agree with you. The wide receiving core has not been great. It's been good enough to throw a couple of touchdown passes. And I'm just saying, when we talk about, I'm comparing it to Trevor Lawrence because I think Trevor Lawrence has been through some of the same issues, but has shown more promise to me. That's all.
The first year the Jaguars had a good team, though.
His first year he had the worst head coach in the history of the NFL, arguably, in Urban Meyer. It was a complete disaster.
Well, you can't compare the five-year sample size, let's say. You can't compare. That's another argument. No way. You can't compare the Giants' talent to the Jaguars. The Jaguars had more talent as a team.
Saquon Barkley is the most talented player on either team. No?
When you're talking about a running back, though, like, come on.
Oh, no, running backs don't help. Okay. The most talented player on either team was Saquon Barkley. That's a fact. Did they have better wide receivers? Sure. The Giants had terrible wide receivers. He was 8-3 before he got hurt. Daniel Jones can't win a game. Kevin in Carmel. What's up, Kev?
Hey, what's going on? This is a side point, but to the last caller, I'm like, Wes Welker is with Daniel Jones. Does anyone know Wes Welker?
That's exactly right. If Wes Welker is not with Tom Brady, does anybody know Wes Welker?
Yeah, yeah. So I'm a big Giants enthusiast. But my thing with the Giants is everyone's like, oh, Daboll and Shane, if they don't have a good year, you know, they're done. In my head, I'm like, how many times are we going to do this? They built up the Bills. I'm like, I don't need to see much with them, you know. And I'm actually happy that they wanted the one quarterback. They didn't take him. They took Neighbors, best available.
Yeah.
Give him time. Because my second favorite team, I'm a big Giants fan, but yeah. My second favorite, I kind of respect the Steelers. And what is that, three coaches in like 30 years? I'm like, that's
no,
how
of
you
course.
Make success.
Yeah, no, listen, I don't disagree. He came in and won more successfully, though. I mean, they can't have another losing season. I don't want to fire Daboll either. I don't. But, I mean, clearly, you could have made the same argument you just made about Joe Judge on some level if he didn't run his mouth at the end of the year and make stupid comments. And I think they did I think they're better off with Daboll than Joe Judge. So, I mean, I don't know. I'm open to keep him. I like him. I think he is a good head coach, and I want to give him time. And I guess the possibility of Belichick out there, I don't know if it really plays a real significant role with ownership or how they view it, but I would love to see Daboll get a chance because I do think he's a good head coach. And already, I don't like the idea that the play calling is still up in the air because it's been a talking point. Just make a decision. It sounds like he wants to call the plays and he's going to call the plays. Just say you're calling the plays. It sucks for Kafka. He'll end up leaving, but it is what it is. You're the head coach. Do what you want to do. Just make it like, just make your case and just do it. And obviously he needs to stop yelling at the same level. He's going to have to take some time to grow, no doubt, but I'd be willing to give him a shot. But yeah, same thing with Daniel Jones. He's going to get a shot. And we'll see. The offensive line should improve. Hopefully Neighbors is a big-time piece for him. He's lost Saquon Barkley, but you know, I think the run game should be okay if the offensive line is better. We'll see what happens. But ultimately, the injury issues, all that, you know, it's just, it's hard for me to compare the two players. I get it. The numbers are similar. But if I had to give one quarterback a contract, either Trevor Lawrence or Daniel Jones, who would you pay? And that's not to justify $51 million and $200 million guaranteed. It's way too much for the production he did, and they didn't have to do it this year. They could have done it next year. But I got to see a hell of a lot more from Daniel Jones before I, you know, try and compare numbers with Trevor Lawrence. I'd rather have Trevor Lawrence. I'd just rather have him for less money than $51
million. Manning takes the knee, and the New York Giants are the Super Bowl 42 champions.
When this happened, you talked about it on The Fan.
They knock off the mighty Patriots 17-14.
When New York sports happens, talk about it here. The Fan, 101.9 FM, and always live on the Free Odyssey app.
That chair went all the way back, 453. I had to see if they can get that on camera. That, you know, that face when you're like falling, or the chair went further back than you thought. Thought I broke the thing, and that's the last thing I need, to break a chair. I broke a chair right in front of a girl once. Really embarrassed. I didn't break a chair. It was I was at my buddy. I don't know. I'm gonna tell this story at 4:54 in the morning. I was at my buddy Brett's house. And
yeah, Brett in Long Island.
It was Brett in Long Island, oddly enough. Yeah, but I'm at my buddy Brett's house, and he had like this weird leather chair that came with like an ottoman or whatever, a thing you put your feet up on. It had wheels on it. It went with the couch. It was like a chair. There's like a separate thing that you had made for that chair that you put your feet up on. And it was like, I don't know, like a rectangle and long. And I guess it was like attached at the bottom to the base and the wheels. I don't know. Anyway, so this, if I'm giving a good description or not. So we're having a party there, and there's a group of girls, high school this is, and we're hanging out, and I started talking to this one girl. I thought it was kind of going okay, and she was sitting on the couch, or we were talking, then she sat down on the couch, and there was no room right next to her. So I sat on the footstool or the ottoman, whatever you want to call it, of this chair, and I should have made sure my weight was more centered. because I must have sat too far on one side, and down I went, up it went. One of the more embarrassing moments of my life that I'm reliving right now. Why? I have 5 minutes. Not the best decision I've ever made, but it's true and it's honest. Right? I think the girl's name was Brittany. I'll never forget. Right on my tuchus. That was embarrassing. That was real embarrassing. Because listen, if things happen like that, you slip on a chair when you're, and that's high school. I mean, I was in better shape. I was athlete of the year, as you all know. But I was always kind of a heavy kid. So when it happens when you're kind of, it just, you know, you can't live it down. There's only one. It's not because the wheels or the thing wasn't right, or just I had too much weight on one edge. It's because I'm a fat bastard and I broke the chair. I got to live with that. And I do, repeatedly. Why? I don't know why. There are things that just stick in your mind. That throughout life, you'll go through life, things will happen. Some of them are meaningless. In the moment, you don't think much of them, but you remember them for whatever reason, years later. And that's one. Trying to talk to this girl that I probably had no chance with anyway until I fell through the chair. Then I really had no chance, nor with anyone else in that room who ever saw me again. That was it. I ruined it for anybody at that party. Any girl there was no longer interested after I busted the chair and everybody pointed and laughed. Thanks a lot, Brett. Thanks a lot. 888-808-1019. I almost have as much shame as Rory McIlroy after the U.S. Open yesterday, as he was up 2 strokes to 5 holes to play, 3 bogeys down the stretch, including 2 short missed putts, and then got the hell out of there as Bryson DeChambeau takes over, won the championship, the U.S. Open. And it's nice when you see golfers. I shouldn't say nice. I feel bad for them. I mean, you feel terrible for them, and I understand why. I guess people are making a big deal out of it. I guess you stay. I think he wanted to get the hell out of there after blowing it like that, 3 bogeys down the stretch, after being in complete control, having obviously a great tournament. He's 2 strokes in the lead with 5 holes to play. He's playing great. And he misses 2 short putts, 3 bogeys down the stretch, loses the tournament. The video of him watching it is, it's tough to watch. I mean, this is Greg Norman. This is a colossal, colossal choke job for Rory McIlroy. And everybody's pissed that he dashed out of there. But that was the other story of the day on Father's Day. I didn't get a chance to watch a lot of it. I was at the pool. I was playing with the kids. I had the Met game on my phone as I was doing all that. I didn't get a chance to watch too much of the golf, which is what it is. I would have liked to. I like to watch the majors. I'm not the biggest golf guy, I'll be honest. But I do watch the majors typically when I get a chance. And I saw that Rory was in the lead, and I was pulling for him because typically, as great as a golfer as he is, and as much as we know him and we know his personal life and everything going on with him, doesn't have the hardware. And he blew a chance to be U.S. Open champion yesterday as he bogeyed 3 down the stretch. And he has to live in infamy, much like I do, for falling through a chair. We're very much alike, me and Rory, like in that aspect. We both have things we'll have to live down. It's okay. It makes you stronger. He will be back from this. He'll be okay. Much like I'm okay. And I still sit in chairs to this day. I still take a chance. If I'm talking to somebody or I'm somewhere, I'll still sit in a chair. Even though I know disaster is right around the corner. All right, that's it for me. Thank you for calling. Thank you for listening. I appreciate it. Fliegelman, I appreciate the help. We'll catch you tomorrow at midnight for a 5-hour midnight ride as we will get ready for the Yankees-Orioles. Biggest series of the season so far, coming off a lousy 2 days in Boston. They try and get right back on the horse. But until then, enjoy the rest of your day. I believe it's supposed to be beautiful this entire week. Hot. It's going to get hot, so stay hydrated. Be well. The warm-up show is next. I'll catch you guys again midnight for a 5-hour midnight ride. Everybody have a great day. Enjoy the rest of it with the Fan. And we'll see you tomorrow at midnight. Everybody, I'm out of here. Take care.
Sports Radio 101.9 FM. WFAN.